Okay, so I want to thank Spiros for inviting me and also everyone else who came here at half past 8 in a Saturday morning. I'm not sure if I would come if I didn't have to give a talk. So let's see. So I'll start with a classical result for curve shortening flow. So this is due to Grayson. And it's from 89. And I'll state the result in a particular case. So let's say that we have a Riemann surface, say compact, with a metric G. And we take gamma, which is a simple closed curve in sigma. Then what the result says is that if gamma is non-zero in pi 1, then if I do curve shortening flow, which I'll just say what it is in a second, so then curve shortening flow exists for all time, curve shortening flow of gamma, of the curve gamma, exists for all time and converges sequentially to a geodesic. So let's explain this with a picture here. So I have my Riemann surface, let's just draw a torus, and I take a simple closed embedded curve, let's call it gamma, something like this, goes on the back. And now what I do with that is I deform this curve in order to decrease its length in the most effective way. So this guy, I move this direction, and that point, I move on that direction, and essentially what I do is I deform the curvature in the direction of its geodesic curvature, because that gives me the most effective way of decreasing the length. And what the theorem says is that if I can do this without any problem until eventually I will converge to a geodesic. This will be gamma zero. Now the flow exists for all time. This process exists for all time. And eventually it'll converge here to a geodesic. And the reason why the theorem is so subtle is because this condition is crucial, that the curve must be simple. So it cannot have self-intersections. This thing is crucial. So let me draw another example. So say that I pick the same torus, but now I make the curve have a self-intersection. So something like this. I go like this, and now it has a loop, and it goes on the back. Okay? Now if I run this curve shortening process, then it's known that what happens in this case is that this loop will pinch in a finite time. So this loop will have a pinch singularity there for some finite time t. And usually for these flows, when things detect between embedded and non-embedded, it's because the proofs are somewhat subtle. So I would say that the main content of the theorem is the fact that here it's okay, in this case it's not. It's known that it's going to have finite time singularities. And so because of this, a natural question is to ask how to extend this theorem to other scenarios. So the question is how to extend. Okay, let's see. Let's make this proper. So how to extend this theorem to other settings. And the first thing that people tried with some success is to look at the codimension 1 case and just flow surface on a three-manifold, say. The other thing which looks less obvious, but we'll see that somewhat makes sense, is to consider the following setup, where the ambient manifold is a Calabi-Yau, meaning I have a Ricci flat metric, I have a complex structure, and I have parallel and zero holomorphic form. So it's Calabi-Yau. And omega is a N0 parallel form. And the reason why this could be somewhat suitable is that a lot of things we have for the curves on the plane, we also have for Lagrangians in Calabi-Yau. So I'll just state the basic facts here. So the first one is just a definition, is that we say n-dimensional manifold in 2n is Lagrangian if J sends the tangent plane into the normal bundle. So any curve on the complex plane is Lagrangian by definition, and this curve there is also Lagrangian by the definition, because J is just rotation by 90 degrees, so clearly a tangent Geissler is a normal guy. Now the second thing, and this is specific of Calabi-Yau, is that the mean curvature vector is given by J grad of some function theta. So let me explain this. And this theta is called the Lagrangian angle. So let me explain this here. So what does this mean? So what it means is that if I have a Lagrangian, there's a multivalued function there, theta, which if I take the gradient, becomes a well-defined vector field. So this guy is a tangent vector field. If I apply J, I get a normal vector, and that's exactly the mean curvature. And this happens for curves on the plane, right? If I just take a curve, if this is the plane, and I just take a curve gamma, and I pick a point there, then I look at the angle that the tangent vector makes with the x-axis. This angle is theta. And we know that the geodesic curvature of gamma comes from differentiating theta twice. So the geodesic curvature is pointing normally there. And the mean curvature is just the vector which points in the direction in which I should decrease, points me in the direction in which I should go if I want to decrease the area of the Lagrangian guy. And this relation, what I'm saying is that we already see this for curves on the plane, where the geodesic curvature is just the second derivative of this angle. So the Lagrangian angle is just an extension of this angle theta. And the third property, which is still great from the analytic point of view, is that if this vector happens to be zero, then that function theta is identically constant, and what this means is that Lagrangian is area minimizing. So let me just write one word, is calibrated by the real part of V minus I theta omega. So if you don't know what this means, let's not worry about it. But this one is the crucial property, is that L is area minimizing, meaning if we do any compact perturbation of L, we never decrease the area. We'll always go above. And a consequence from this fact is that if I take a family of surface of Lagrangian, if I take a family of submanifolds which evolve by dx dt, if I evolve in the direction of its mean curvature, then because the mean curvature is a infinitesimal Hamiltonian deformation, the Lagrangian condition is preserved. Then Lagrangian condition is preserved. And for this reason, this is called Lagrangian mean curvature flow. So the bottom line is that when we are with this special laundry, which is Calabial, we have this large family of surface, of submanifolds, which have the following property, that the ones which are minimal are an absolute minimum for the area functional, are global minimums. And moreover, if I pick a Lagrangian and if I deform it in the direction of its mean curvature, the Lagrangian condition is preserved. Exactly the same thing that happens there, because every surface is tautologically a Lagrangian. Every curve. So because of this, there's a conjecture due to Thomas Yao where the motivation was to mimic this theorem of Grayson I've just erased. And the conjecture is the following. It's called the conjecture of Thomas Yao. Conjecture is that if X2N is Calabial, then there is a notion of stability so that if a Lagrangian is stable in this sense, then the Lagrangian mean curvature flow will exist for all time and converge to a special Lagrangian and converge to an area minimizing Lagrangian. Converge to an area minimizing Lagrangian. Lagrangian. So these guys, they have a fancy name. They're called special Lagrangians. So here the motivation is just to mimic this Grayson theorem. And the catch with the conjecture is that the notion of stability that they propose is highly complicated, and so, for instance, it's known that special Lagrangians are stable according to their definitions, but it seems to be a highly non-trivial statement to show that there are perturbations of special Lagrangians which are not special Lagrangians and are stable. So definition is not some easy notion there. So because of this, people which look at this conjecture, they made an effort to try to find an easier statement. And the one I'm writing here was proposed by Muta Wang. This would be conjecture B. And conjecture says that if LN containing a Calabial is a Hamiltonian isotopic to an embedded special Lagrangian, then the mean curvature flow will exist for all time and converge to the special Lagrangian. Let's call it sigma. Then Lagrangian mean curvature flow exists for all time and converges to sigma. Sequentially, let's not try that, to sigma. So what Muttal proposed is that being a Hamiltonian isotopic to a special Lagrangian would be, you know, a substitute for that stable condition, because, again, from this Thomas Yao stable condition, it doesn't follow necessarily that being a Hamiltonian isotopic to a special Lagrangian implies the guy is stable. There's some other extra condition, which is the trick part. And so the theorem I'll talk about, and I'll outline the proof, something I did last year, where the content is that, so this conjecture is, conjecture B is false. Conjecture B is false, meaning on any four-dimensional Calabi-Yau, on a four-dimensional Calabi-Yau, if I pick any embedded Lagrangian if sigma is an embedded Lagrangian, there's always there is L, a Hamiltonian isotopic to sigma, which the value of singularity is under the flow. Under Lagrangian mean curvature flow. It doesn't have to be. In the example I constructed, just pick any. Of course, if I take sigma to be special Lagrangian, this is a counterexample, but just any Lagrangian you pick, if it's embedded, I can always construct a guy in the simultaneous at the peak class, which develops a pinch for the flow. So four is a real, so it'll be like a K3. The prior to this, the first example of singularities, this was constructed by Shen and Wolfson, and is the following. So let's see, this was in 2005. Is that on any Calabi-Yau, there is a Lagrangian, there is L Lagrangian, which is non-zero in homology, and Lagrangian mean curvature flow develops finite time singularities. And Lagrangian mean curvature flow develops finite time singularities. Where here the catch, or what is not proven, is that, let me write that here. The catch of this theorem is that L could be immersed, in which case the same result is already true for curves on a torus, because of the example I wrote. So L could be immersed. Because as you've seen, if I take, there was this example I erased, of a curve with a self-intersection, which was clearly non-trivial in homology, but when I run the flow, I still have a finite time singularity. So being embedded is crucial, because the mean curvature flow distinguishes between embedded and immersed. Yeah, it's embedded, yeah, it's embedded. The later, in 2006, I construct examples of finite time singularities that are embedded, but they are in C2. In C2, there is L, a Hamiltonian isotopic to a plane, which develops finite time singularities under the flow, which develops singularities for the flow. And here, the catch is that the ambient manifold is Calabi-Yau, but is not compact. And moreover, this Lagrangian L is Hamiltonian, is actually a compact perturbation of a plane, so it's not compact as well. And this conjecture, they were both for compact manifolds. The catch is that C2 and L are not compact. Yeah, it is. Yeah. So I guess that's the theorem of Elyashvark and Polterovich, is that if you have any Lagrangian, which is a compact perturbation of a plane, then it's a Hamiltonian isotopic to a plane by Hamiltonian isotopies, which are supported in a fixed compact set. Because if you allow the compact set to move, then the theorem is almost accurate. The trick thing is that the Hamiltonian isotopies are just supporting a compact set. If I run the flow immediately after, it's no longer a compact perturbation, because it jumps, you know, there's a maximum principle there that it makes. If I start the compact perturbation on the plane and I run the flow, it becomes just asymptotic to the plane. So in that regard, the Hamiltonian isotopy is not that, you know, it's not preserved in such a strong sense yet. No, the main problem with it? Yeah, by catch is a let's see. By catch, I mean the problem with the statement, sorry. No. So by catch mean why is that this theorem does not contradict conjecture A and conjecture B? The reason why it doesn't contradict here is that I know it's non-trivial homology, but it doesn't mean it has to be isotopic to a special Lagrangian. In this case, the problem why it's not contradicted is that the theorem is for compact guys, and these guys are not compact. So that's what I mean. Sorry, I should have. No, so if I take a minimizing guy and I flow it, that's a fixed point. Nothing happens. It's the same way as when I, let's see, this might fall on me, but let's not worry with that. So it's the same thing here, right? You take some Lagrangian, some curve, and you flow it, and it will converge to a geodesic, which is a special Lagrangian. Oh, okay, only if H is zero. You see, in general, if you have a Lagrangian, then what you know is that the mean curvature has a primitive, just like curves on the plane. If that mean curvature is zero, then theta is constant, and the guy happens to be error minimizing. And the motivation is that it's super hard to construct these error minimizing guys. So the idea is, how can I make sure they exist? So the natural thing is, you pick any guy, you deform it in order to hit the special Lagrangian guy, the minimum guys and guys, that's motivation. Yeah, is this okay? Sorry about that. I should have been more clear on this. So let me explain how these examples are constructed, because they'll be important to construct these counter examples. Okay. It's not, well, it's not clear. So I would say that it's not clear, because the stability notion is not, well, you know, it uses things people don't understand. I do not understand for sure, like Foucault categories and graded Lagrange. I mean, it uses things I don't understand. It's just, I guess the point is, you know, we don't understand that, so let's pick one where we can either try to prove it or disprove it somehow. Where, you know, geometric analysts can do something with it. So it's not clear if my counterexample is a counterexample to this one or not. So let me explain these those compact perturbations of a plane which develop singularities, because they're going to be important for the rest. So the basic way you do when you want to find counterexample, or you know, when you want to study the flow, what you do is you assume the initial condition has some symmetry, and then you reduce the order of the flow by one, and then you just study an easier flow, because symmetries are preserved by this flow. So let me explain this. So let's take a curve gamma containing C, and we can form L gamma, which is gamma cosine alpha gamma sine alpha, where alpha is in S1, and this guy is a Lagrangian in C2. So for instance, if my curve gamma is just a straight line, if gamma is a straight line there, this and that, then this L gamma is just a plane. Another maybe could example that if gamma is a circle, which say of radius 1, then L gamma is just a Clifford torus. This is the Clifford torus. And the fact is that the Lagrangian mean curvature flow preserves these symmetries. So if I start with something which is of this form, if I run the flow, it will still be of this form. So I might as well just study the flow for these curves. And so constructing that guy there, okay, so maybe so amounts to construct the following. So then that's, let's call this that we call this A. So then theorem A amounts to show the following. So let's consider a curve gamma epsilon r which has the following form. It's I want it to be a compact perturbation of a plane. So outside a compact set it should be just a plane. So here it should just coincide with this line, because I want it to be a compact perturbation of a plane. And then what I do is I take another plane there and I make a desingularization of these two planes. So it'll be something like this, and then I make sure the guy is embedded. So the curve will be like this. And I draw this curve with symmetry because if we take alpha, zero, or pi, we get gamma and minus gamma. So when I draw them, I should, you know, draw them, I should draw the curves with the symmetry. And I put the parameter epsilon, which is the size of the neck. Epsilon, size of neck. And I put another parameter r, which is like, oops, should go this way. So I want to make these guys big enough. So this would be r, and this would be 2r, where here essentially I just see three planes, and on 2r that's where the guy connects. So this is just a compact perturbation of a plane. And the theorem there, what amounts to show was that if epsilon, if the neck is sufficiently small and r sufficiently large, then this curve evolves as following. Let's draw this. So this is the initial condition, like this. And then there will be two competing phenomena there. That's why I picked this epsilon and r. One thing, this neck will try to pinch, and this guy will try to get in. What I want to make sure is that this guy pinches way before this neck has, this bulge has time to escape. So that's why I make the r very big and the epsilon small, to make sure that this guy pinches before that one. And what's going to happen is that this guy decreases, but that guy pinches. So it's going to be something like this. If I had taken epsilon proportional to r, then the guy could just escape and converge to the plane. So that's why I do these parameters. And this guy is a singularity at time t. So for this reason, I'll now explain, let's see, I have like 20 minutes. So what I'm going to do now is I'll explain the how to prove this theorem. So I'll outline the basic strategy, I'll explain what the crucial step is, and I will say how did I overcome that. So let's see. So this is the guy that if I pulled up will fall down? Yeah.
Okay. I'll just write here, so.
So let's explain the basic strategy to prove that. So I'm going to pick my Calabi-Yau, any, and there I will have I pick a Lagrangian there, which there an embedded Lagrangian there with sigma. Then what I do is, I pick a point there, and I choose Darboux coordinates around that point. So, choose Darboux coordinates around that point. Darboux coordinates around P. So, on a little ball. Then, what I do is, I remove this ball, and I glue in one of these guys. And the reason I chose Darboux coordinates is that then I know I can glue it so that it's still Lagrangian. So what I do is I take this guy, I remove that ball, and I glue by a scaled version of that guy, for instance. Something like this. I replace sigma intersect with this ball of radius delta by a very small by a sufficiently small version of that with, let's say, delta square. I scale my guy by delta square, epsilon r intersects with the ball of radius delta. So this is just to make sure that this guy is much smaller than that scale. And then the third step, I hope that this guy will pinch in the very same way that it does that. And that's exactly the part of the content. I'll put hope between commas. Hope. So this will be my L. Hope that L will have finite time singularity. Meaning that when I run the flow, this guy will pinch exactly like that. The step three, that's all the content is, because, so this is a crucial remark, right? Singularities are not stable for mean curvature flow. Meaning, if I have a solution which is singular and I perturb it a bit, it doesn't mean that the new solution will also be singular. For instance, this example is the following. Say that I take on the plane, I take a self-immersed curve. So this is just a curve on the complex plane, and I run curve shortening flow for this curve. Then it's known that what happens is that this guy will give me a finite time singularity because this loop will pinch. So this guy will become singular. Now, I'm going to perturb this curve in a way so that the singularity will disappear. And the way we do that is, I imagine now that this curve is actually embedded in R3. I have there that component. And because I have now one more component, I don't do the loop, I go just slightly below, like that. So now, I have the guy with the self-intersection, I move the direction up and I, you know, lift a bit so that the guy no longer has self-intersection. Then, if I run the flow, what will happen in some of these cases is that the curve will just unwind. And so, when here it's singular, the curve now will just become like that, and eventually will converge to a straight line. So, my initial guy is singular. If I perturb it a bit, it will stop being singular. And that's exactly what is at stake here. The fact that I know that this guy will give me a finite time singularity, it doesn't mean that if I perturb it a bit, the singularity will still be there. okay, in the same way that's there. So the main thing I want to show is that any small perturbation of this guy will also have a finite time singularity. If the perturbation has the same symmetries, then it's easy by the maximum principle. But if my perturbation breaks these symmetries, I no longer have the maximum principle, so there's no reason why the guy should be... It will not be preserved, yeah. Now, what I need to understand is, if I perturb this guy in a way not to preserve the symmetries, why is that? Yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah, but you know, it's the same problem there. Yeah. So, let's see. Okay. So I'll need to leave this picture there. So let me explain now the basic theorem. I need to explain. Is that? So instead of this, the thing I need to prove is the following. Then. This is the thing I will explain, is that, there is delta small, so that for all epsilon sufficiently small and r sufficiently large, if L is delta close in C to alpha, to L epsilon R to that guy, then Lagrangian mean curvature flow develops finite time singularity. Okay, so I'll explain now how to prove this. Yeah, in C2, yeah, but if I can do it in C2, if I find a robust argument to do it in C2, I'll find a robust argument to do when the ambient metric is almost C2. You know, I just need to find an argument which does not rely on the maximum principle. That's the thing. So let's suppose that the theorem is false and I want to get a contradiction. So suppose it's false, meaning I have a sequence of flows which exist for all time. This is the sequence to Lagrangian mean curvature flow, and this guy, the initial condition, converges strongly, or in C2 alpha, to L epsilon R, with epsilon very small and R very large. So, I take a sequence of perturbations of that guy, which will converge strongly to that guy, and I suppose the flow exists for all time, and I want to get a contradiction. So it's going to work. The first thing one does is just to take the limit, which exists because there's a compactness for that. Is that the first thing is that LIT will converge weakly to a solution LT of, this is in some weak sense, in variable sense, or in bracket flow sense. So this sequence, as I go to infinity, I take the limit. It's going to converge to some solution, which I don't know what it is. I only know it's Lagrangian, but I also know that this solution will have the same symmetries as that guy, meaning it will be a solution of that form for sigma t, a curve in the plane. So this is a fact which it doesn't have to be true for general flow, but it's true for Lagrangian mean curvature flow because a known fact for, say, the elliptic analog is to say that special Lagrangians have the same symmetries that the cones have at infinity. It's not true in general for the minimal surface, but for special Lagrangians it's true. So the parabolic analog is to say that if the initial condition as the symmetries, and if I run the flow in this weak sense, the old solution will have the same symmetries. Okay. Then the second step is to say where sigma 1 is to get a hold of what the curve sigma 1 must look like. And this is where all the technical content comes, is that sigma 1 is a curve which looks like, and I'll just draw it. So it's going to have, this will be a sigma 0 curve, and sigma 1 will have a self-intersection, like that. So this will be the curve sigma 1. In particular, if the flow exists smoothly, what I get at the second step is that the flow needs to change a Hamiltonian isotropy class for sure, which it's not a problem because the flow is not so this Lagrangian curvature flow does not need to preserve a Hamiltonian isotropy class. It's only at the infinitesimal level that it preserves. So what I'm saying is that I run this flow, I take a limit, and when time 1, I must be close to something like this, and Li at time 1 converges strongly in C2 alpha to the corresponding Lagrangian. And now after this, I'm in good shape to get the contradiction, because what I do now is I run the flow for this guy. This was done by Engnant. And from the work of Engnant, we know that sigma t, when t greater or equal than 1, it will evolve as following. So this is my initial condition. This is the curve on the plane. So this is sigma 1. Now what's going to happen if I run the flow is that this loop will pinch. So it's going to get smaller and smaller until it pinches. Give me a singular time here. And after the pinch, because it's the limit of smooth solutions, then the guy will become instantaneously smooth. So it will become like this. This is for time t bigger than t, and will converge to the plane. And now we can get the contradiction from that. This will be the fourth thing, is to get the contradiction. Let's see. On one hand, I know that on a small neighborhood of the origin and outside a large ball like this, there, so outside this annular region, what I see is just essentially, I see here straight lines and I see there also straight lines. So for this reason, it's standard theory, or it follows from White's regularity theorem that, let's call this ball here eta, and here is some R naught, that LIT, if I intersect, if I subtract the annular region between R naught and eta, then from White's regularity theorem, this guy is converging strongly to L sigma t intersect with that neighborhood, right? Let's just put the annular region of eta R naught. So outside this region, I get strong convergence. So if I take the origin, so I can look at the, here I have strong convergence, outside I have strong convergence. I can look at the function of t, which is the Lagrangian angle at infinity, because my guy is just asymptotic to a plane, and this function this function is well defined up to a constant. So I subtract the value at the origin. And because I have strong convergence near the origin and near infinity, I have that this function must be smooth. Ft is smooth because of star, which is this. But on the other hand, I know that Lagrangian angle, it's not exact, but it's almost just the angle that the tangent vector makes with the x-axis. So when I go from this configuration to that configuration, the Hopf index theorem says that the angle must jump or decrease by 2 pi because I'm eating a loop. So there's a Hopf index theorem which says that the limit when t goes to the singular time prior of this angle must be equal when the limit goes to later times, and I must add or subtract a multiple of 2 pi regarding the orientation. And so this gives me the contradiction with the function that must be smooth. So meanwhile, there must have been a singularity, and so this convergence is not. So meanwhile, there must have been singularity, and so this function will not be smooth on the approximation. So there must have been a jump all the way in between. Okay, so let's see. I have 10 minutes left. Shall I explain how to prove this? It's Saturday morning, right? So I'll just stop here, and then if you want, I can explain, roughly speaking. I feel bad for everyone who's here, right? Okay, so I'll just stop here.